nun that's leaving today, we'll take her to the airport. And then on Friday, we won't have class in the evening, so we must set up for the children's evening.
Okay. So today, the evening class will take place, as usual. Or any changes? No changes. Evening. Okay. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. So, today we continue with the subject matter that we have been trying to develop yesterday, namely the mental factors present in each and every moment of the wholesome cognition. Yesterday we have tackled the special javana. I hope by now you have become already familiar with the terms, the special javana which leads to the mahagata, to the sublime cognition, how it takes place. Then we have already spoken about the seven sabbacitta sadharana, seven mental factors present in each and every moment of cognition, no matter whether it is wholesome, unwholesome, or resultant, or automatic, kusala, akusala, vipaka, kriya, all cognition, even the bhavanga cognition, they necessarily have to have these mental factors. No cognition without them. Then we have mentioned the six pakinakas, the prakirnakas, the scattered mental factors. Then we have pointed out that in case of the first jhana, which we are discussing now, all of them are there, all six are there. They are called pakinakas because they are scattered. They do not have to appear. But in case of the first jhana, you have all of them without exception. That means applied thought, sustained thought. You have to remember the order. Buddha's teaching is not only according to the meaning, but it's also desana, alankara has to be there. The order is very important because it shows. Even so, these, they are, as I have pointed out, there are two ways of teaching according to the upapati kamma, according to the order of arising, and according to the desana kamma, according to the order of teaching to bring you to clarity about the mutual relationship between these dhammas. So first comes vitaka, applied thought, then vichara, the sustained thought, why we have already discussed. The vitaka is a chitasa olarikata, is a grossness of mind. The vichara is the subtleness of mind. After that comes piti, the joy. Then comes adimokha, the resolution. Then comes virya, the effort of the mind, usahana. Then comes chanda, the desire of the mind to be present at the object, or to do something. Katu kamata. We have all discussed these dhammas in terms of their lakhana, rasa, pachupatana, padathana. I hope you still remember. Then we have come to the category of the 19 dhammas, 19 mental factors existent in each and every moment of the wholesome cognition. And we have started with the sadha. Sadha comes as number one, the confidence. We have explained why. And we have explained what the confidence means. You should remember the characteristic of confidence is okapana. Okapana means avakalpana, arranging oneself down with the object. That means, as we have pointed out, it implies also certain understanding of the object. Then, after the sadha, after the confidence, comes sati, which was the subject of our almost whole day. We have been explaining sati because this factor is of crucial importance for understanding of your meditation process. And we have especially emphasized the different aspects of sati. That means it is not floating away from the desired object. At the same time, it means establishing oneself in the desired object. And at the same time also, it means being open to all the other objects that come along. So to say, articulating them to the mind. But we have pointed out that this articulation is not a verbal articulation, it is pre-verbal articulation. The verbal articulation belongs then to applied thought and sustained thought. So it brings to the mind which objects are useful and which objects are not useful. And it can only do so due to the firm perception with which it is always connected. The firm perception, tira sanya, as we have pointed out, is the condition for sati to function. If there is no firm perception, what happens? The mind floats on the objects like what? Like dry pumpkin on the stream. And any object, whatever object appears, can take it away. And exactly that which establishes itself on the object while not suppressing other objects, but being open to other objects, this knowledge, which objects are useful and which objects are not useful, that exactly when you see that force in your mind, that is your sati. And without sati, as we have pointed out, there is no meditation. My teacher always used to say, the Mata Ranyana Rama Hamduru, that if you have 50% of the day you have a sati, then the 50% of the day you are in meditation, and you should be aware of it. If 60, then 60. If 70, then 70. And he said that the monk, one who is monk, he should at least make it 50%, otherwise he does not count as a monk. So try your best. And then the next Dhamma after sati, we have pointed out, comes hiri. And because we have been discussing hiri during our evening classes already, so I guess you have some idea what hiri is, what the hiri has, as we have pointed out. It is translated as shame, but it means much more than just shame. It implies also modesty, anatimani. In Metta Sutta, it is nothing else than the hiri, hiriman. And it means being consciousness, conscious, conscious, adakman in English. Just same aspect that you have in sati. It is only can function when the sati, mindfulness, is there. If the mindfulness is there, there will not be any hiri. So the hiri comes after mindfulness. So this order is very important. First, you have to have strong desire for Dhamma, which is the essence of confidence. When you have strong desire for Dhamma, you will establish yourself in the knowledge of what is for you useful and what is for you non-useful. This is a job of the sati. Sati is a great educator, as we have pointed out yesterday. Is an educator of the mind, is a guardian of the mind. Sati is nothing but the guardian of the mind. We have pointed out that the manifestation of sati is citta araka, the guarding of the mind. And the guarding of the mind is a job of the wise man. We have pointed out, we have quoted the verses of the Dhammapada. Chittam rakheya medavi chittam guttam sukhavaham. When you guard your mind, you become wise. When you don't guard your mind, however intelligent you may be, you are stupid. also the guarding of the mind as far as Buddhism is concerned is the manifestation of your buddhi, of your intelligence, as far as Buddhism is concerned. The wisdom of Buddhism, you should remember, is a wisdom of the interdependent origination and of the Four Noble Truths. And you cannot understand Four Noble Truths and the interdependent origination unless you guard your mind. So the sati is a base of meditation, any meditation. Samatha meditation, vipassana meditation, all meditations, no question without sati. Unless you guard your mind, as far as Buddhism is concerned, you're not using any intelligence whatsoever. So only when you educate your mind by guarding your mind, by sati, sati is the education of mind, then you will experience happiness in the Buddhist sense, which means happiness of samatha and vipassana. And this guarding of the mind, this effort to educate the mind is our child. If we don't educate it, it will become very naughty. I have yesterday especially emphasize that if you don't educate your mind, nobody will do the job. Then when you become a little older, 50, 60, 70, then oy wahoy, big trouble. Without educated mind, no education whatsoever, even if you have 5 PhDs will help you to get out of the trouble. Only sati can help you, the educator of the mind. If you have not used that educator, how much you have learned will be of no use to you. So please try as soon as possible and as much as possible to educate your mind by sati. And this education of mind by sati comes to expression, zum Ausdruck. How? One feels shame and one feels hiri and otapa. The sati is the protector of the mind, and hiri and the otapa are the protectors of the world in Buddhism, lokapala. They will exist in the world only when they are expression of the kusala existing in the world. When there is no kusala in the world, the world will fall apart. And in our days, the falling apart of the world can happen very, very fast. It can happen faster than before you finish your cup of tea. So what protects the world is the hari and otapa, the shame and fear of the bad consequences of bad actions. And now let us look close at them from the point of view of Abhidhamma, how they are described in the tradition. What is hari? The characteristic of hari is papato jiguchana. Jiguchana means jiguchati. Jiguchati means to be, how would you translate jiguchati? To be ashamed of. But is there a better word for jigu? Disgust. To be disgusted. To be disgusted of the papa, of the bad action of body, speech and mind. And this, you can be disgusted of the bad actions of the body, speech and mind only when you guard your mind. If you don't guard your mind, you will never be disgusted. The more you guard your mind, the more you will be disgusted. So those who are striving hard are only those who are disgusted by the papa. Who getting disgusted by the papa, they have samvega. And only one with samvega makes an effort. So they are the protectors of the world in the sense that those who have them, they make effort to make themselves good and make the world good. And if we don't make effort to make the world ourselves good and the world good, then the world has no chance. And everybody has, with the exception of the Buddhas and Arahats, everybody has in himself, when one looks so closely, when one protects one mind, one will discover how much tendency to evil is there. The more one practices sati, the more clear one sees the evil in oneself. Therefore, it is not by accident that shame comes after sati, as the complement to sati. Those who are shameless people, who do a lot of evil in the world, they are certainly those who have no idea what the sati is. And not knowing what sati is, however smart they may be, however intelligent they may be, their intelligence will be of no use for the world, because it cannot protect the world, it can destroy the world. The great evil men of history, they were very intelligent people, but because no idea of sati, no idea of shame and fear of evil consequences of, therefore, they use their intelligence to make evil not things, not to make good things. Now we come to the rasa. What is the rasa? What is the taste? How do we taste in ourselves the mental factor of shame, of modesty, by laja akarana papanam akarana, by removing the evil acts of body, speech and mind, especially mind, because the mind is a key. First, there has to be evil thought, then only the evil speech and evil bodily action can appear without evil thought, the no question of bodily and oral misconduct happening. So the sati is the key for that. So removing evil by means of shame. As soon as the shame appears in the mind, the evil becomes very shameful. When the shame does not appear in the mind, then the evil can dance his and no way to stop him, because the opposite of Hari, the Ahirika, the mental factor of Ahirika, is accompaniment of all the unwholesome conditionings. And all the unwholesome conditionings appear when there is no sati. When there is sati, then all the wholesome conditionings appear, beginning with shame. And they will appear only under the condition if one has confidence, one has faith, one has arranged oneself with the wholesome objects in the world. Then how we will find out that we have this sati, we have this lajja, this hari, this shame, this modesty. How will we find out? By lajja akarena papato sankochana, by shrinking. When the sati becomes powerful, then the mind shrinks from doing all evil. And what is the cause of, the primary cause of shame? This is very important to understand. The primary cause of shame is atagarava, the regard for oneself. If you don't have regard for yourself, if you don't have high opinion of yourself, high opinion not in the sense that you are proud of yourself, exactly the opposite. The high opinion of yourself means the moral conviction as being your true self. So unless you have this conviction that the moral, that the good in you belongs to your true self, then you will not practice modesty, shame. So the shame in the Abhidhamma has been compared, in Visuddhimagga has been compared to the lady from a good family. A lady from a good family will not do any evil because she is very much aware of that she has the honor. Huh? because she has a this Gaurava, she takes regards herself highly. Therefore, she will not do any evil. Now, the otapa, the fear of the bad consequences of the bad actions, is like who? It's like a vesa, like the prostitute. The prostitute will not do any evil because she has a fear she will lose her business. She will lose her clients. She will lose her status of being accepted in the society. So of the, so you should see this difference very clearly. The shame, one practices shame due to regard for oneself, and one practices fear of bad consequences of bad actions due to regard for others. This is a difference. Now, what is the characteristic of the dread of bad consequences of bad actions? So this dread otapa, actually hri and otapa, they both can be translated as a shame. They are both shame. But the hri is a shame in respect to oneself, and otapa is a shame in respect to others. So that is why this hri otapa, they come always come together. There is no question of one not being separated from the other. In the Chinese tradition, they just become one compound, Canhui. Because they their essence is both the same, the shame, but while the hri is a shame due to regard for oneself, the otapa is a shame due to regarding others. So the hri is a shame looking into the inner window, and the otapa is a shame looking to the outer window. So the characteristic of this shame due to regard for the others is dread then. Uttasana. Uttasana means uttrasana. Your best translation is probably dread, but we, because in this our Western civilization of ours, the dread is usually connected with the fear of God, which has been implanted very deeply. especially in the Western civilization, but it is not real to be taken in this sense. This uttrasana is just a dread of the evil consequences of the evil actions. Dread auf Deutsch, wie wird man übersetzen? Gibt es hier gute deutsche Experten?
Dread, fear, greatly, extreme apprehension, reluctant to do.
Bedrohung, I think bedrohung is different. Bedrohung means to be threatened. That's not. Die guten Christen, sie sagen Furcht. The Christian, for us, the Christian idea necessarily comes in, but it is slightly different, because the otapa means being fearful of the consequences of bad actions, not so much due to the no question of God, but question of one's question of karma. Huh? Karma is the ruler of the world in Buddhism, not the God. So the idea of dread in Western culture is based very much on the idea of God being the ruler of the world. But in the Buddhist culture, the karma is the ruler of the world, not the God. The God also acts according to the karma only. The karma is the most important aspect of Dhamma. And karma means just the volition and the result of volition. So being fearful of the bad actions and the results of the bad action, that is a Buddhist otapa. So it is different. It does not mean you will not go flagellating and so on. It does not imply that at all. So then it is the other things are exactly the same, just like with shame. The taste or the function of dread is to just due to dread not doing any evil, because you fear the consequences of the bad actions. So the understanding of karma is implied here. And the manifestation is just the same. Just shrinking from doing evil, especially in mind, of thinking evil, due to fear from the bad consequences. So it implies, as we have seen, that you are guarding your mind. Only then these things will automatically happen. If you don't guard your mind, then these things will not happen. This shrinking from evil due to regard for yourself and others will not happen unless you guard your mind. So, next one, so you should remember also this order, Sada, Sati, Hri, Otapa, number 5. It is also very logical. How? We actually come to know that this good development is in us, that we are guarding our mind and that we shrink from evil due to shame of from the, due to regard to for ourselves and for others. How it will be manifested? By alobha. By alobha means not grabbing. Detachment. The detachment is the natural result of practicing of guarding the mind, implying shame of due to regard for oneself and regard for others. Then, as we have said, cittam guttam sukhavaham, when one guards one mind, the happiness will come. And happiness, the real happiness in the Buddhist sense, is what? Is santosa. The santosa means the fulfillment in oneself. Not due to fulfillment, due to enjoying some sensual objects, but the fulfillment with oneself, with one's own mind. So this alobha is the most important virtue of meditation, which comes from guarding the mind, implying shame due to regard for oneself and for others. And this fulfillment due to detachment from things is then the base for meditation. In Abhidharma Kosha, the condition for meditation is nothing but this santosa, fulfillment with contentment, inner contentment. Santosa means inner contentment. That is the best. And only when you are innerly contented, as Abhidharma Kosha says, especially Abhidharma Samuchaya Asanga emphasizes that, only when you are innerly contented, you can contemplate anicca, the impermanence. If you are not innerly contented, then you will never succeed in contemplating impermanence. It is very important to understand. You will never succeed in understanding impermanence unless you detach. Detach from yourself and detach from the world. And you will only be able to detach when you guard your mind. If you don't guard your mind, you will never detach. So, no matter in which Buddhist tradition, there is no question of any wholesome cognition without this very fact of detachment. And especially in Northern tradition, it is emphasized as the very entrance into meditation. Without it, no question of samatha and vipassana. Due to santosa, then comes the all the most important virtues of meditation, the alpeichata, the desiring little. And being contented with whatever one has and desiring little, this is the necessary condition for meditation. If you have this, you become the member of the Arya Kula, of the noble lineage. Then you can be monk, otherwise you are not monk. What is the nature of the monk? The nature of the one who is a member of the Arya Kula. He has santosa, he is satisfied with whatever pindapata, whatever food he gets. He is satisfied with whatever chivara, whatever dress he has. He is satisfied with whatever lodging he has. He is satisfied with whatever medicine he has. And he finds happiness in meditation and in cutting defilements. This is, if you can do that, you are born in the noble family. Then you are to expect noble results. If you can do that, the Magga and the Phalas, they just come out like lotus flowers from the buds. These are the buds. The essence of Kusala is detachment, which has to come from guarding the mind. So, what is the rasa, the taste of detachment? Aramane chitasa agheda, not no attachment, no strong attachment to the object. So it is compared to the drop of water on the lotus petal. It will just never attach. The drops of water will never attach to the lotus. They will always flow on the edges. And the opposite of this is the lobha. What is the taste of lobha? You should become very familiar with it. You become very familiar with it only when you guard your mind by sati. What is the essence of, what is the taste of lobha? The Abhidhamma says the taste of lobha is like the piece of raw flesh on the pan without oil. It will stick to the pan. Sizzling. Very great suffering. So just contemplate this example, the lotus, the drop of water on the lotus flower and the piece of raw flesh on the pan without oil. These two, the whole world of difference. The one characterizes the unwholesome cognition, the other characterizes the wholesome cognition. Wholesome cognition is always detached cognition. So remember also in your meditation, very important, if you grab for the object, for your nimitta or whatever it is, then it is not, cannot be the wholesome cognition, not possible. And without wholesome cognition, you will never get into jhana, no question. So please contemplate these two images of the drops of water on the lotus and of the piece of raw flesh on the pan, iron pan. Here in Europe they don't use so much, but in India or Sri Lanka always they just the raw iron and you make the chapatis on that. And now you put the piece of raw flesh. Now they have in Europe all modernized using, it does not stick so you can't see so clearly. So they are camouflaging the the suffering of attachment by modernizing the iron pans. Now you take the original iron pan in India or Sri Lanka, then you will see how the raw flesh goes. So attachment is suffering, detachment is happiness. The santosa, the contentment, can only come from detachment. The contentment is detachment. Then it will be also manifested by not grasping. By non-attachment, analina bhava. The Buddha says that when the Buddha has attained the enlightenment, he thought that this Dhamma he has discovered, the Dhamma he has realized, not discovered, it is always there. This Dhamma that he has realized, the beings, the Paja, they cannot understand because they are alayagata. They find pleasure in alaya, in attachment. In alaya means in being based on something, like you have Himalaya, the Hima is snow, the abode of snow are the mountains, Himalaya. So the abode of all the unwholesome is attachment. And because the people Buddha sought after enlightenment, because we beings, we find pleasure in attachment, therefore no way to understand Dhamma. So he thought, forget that. Now I will enjoy the fruits of my realization and just spend the rest of my days in Ditta Dhamme Sukhavihara, in dwelling in the happiness of presence. But our dear friend, the Brahma, has read his thought, and he came. Oh, you should not do that. With compassion, there are people who have little dust in the eyes. They are, what means little dust in the eyes? Little attachment. Nothing else. Dust in the eyes is our attachment. So the Brahma convinced Buddha that there are some beings like you, because you have decided to become monks, so you have, I hope so, little dust in the eyes. So you have become monks, so you should try to understand the Dhamma. Only those who have little dust in the eyes, little attachment, can understand Dhamma. Those who have much attachment, molto difficile. Our Italian friend is not here. Huh? Okay. Where is he sick? The cooking. Oh, he's cooking. Okay. So, Analina Bhava, non-attachment. Non-attachment means literally not adhering. Alaya means adherence. The best translation of alaya is adherence, from the root. Li means adhere, laya. So because of non-adherence, the aloba is manifested by non-adherence. Just like what? What is it compared with? Like shit. The reasonable man, when he sees shit, he will have non-adherence. He will not come and squeeze it in his hand, because he will feel very shy in regard to the shit. So the shyness, the shame comes before the detachment. Those who are shameful, they will not attach, because they understand attachment as the source of evil. And why they can understand it? Because they have been educated in their mind by sati. And what is the primary cause of alobha, of the detachment? This is very important to understand. All the sahajata dhammas, all the mental factors coming together with it. So if detachment is there, you will immediately find out by the condition of the all the other mental factors. They the whole mind becomes different when the detachment is there. So the attachment and detachment is a whole world of difference, like between the drop of water on the lotus flower and the piece of raw flesh on the Indian or Sri Lankan frying pan. So, northern tradition, southern tradition, any tradition, always, without exception, when there is wholesome cognition, there has to be alobha and adosa. Now, just like alobha, we have pointed out, is the base for realization of impermanence, the adosa, the lack of anger, lack of hate, the non-hate, can one say? The non-hate, which is a synonym of metta. Metta means a condition of being friend of oneself and friend of the world. And who is a friend? One who is only one, who is not angry. And this quality of not being angry, being free from anger, being free from hate, is a just like the detachment is a base for understanding of anicca, of impermanence, so the lack of anger, the metta, is a base for understanding of dukkha. Only those who practice metta, who practice non-hate, can understand the depths of dukkha. When you understand the depths of dukkha, it is impossible that you become angry with anyone. Just like when you have realized alobha, it is impossible that you will become attached to anything. So these two mental factors being the base and the necessary accompaniment of the whole wholesome, are the very essence of vipassana. No vipassana mind without them. And the insight, exactly the depths of insight, is manifested by these two dhammas, by alobha and adosa. The more prominent they become, the more insight. That is why Buddha always emphasizes, there is no worry, no attachment, and there is no anger in the wise man. These dhammas only belong to the balas. Please read Bahu Dhatuka Sutta, Majjhima Nikaya. The real wise men are only those, as far as Buddhism is concerned, the real wise men are those who have detachment and non-anger. If you don't have detachment and non-anger, whatever qualities you may have, they don't really count. So detachment, another word for detachment is nekama. Alobha and nekama, they are more or less synonyms. In the Theravada tradition, the nekama and the metta, which is adosa, the nekama and metta, they are the paramis. Without them, no question. Of really being useful to oneself and to others. So the practicing the nekama paramis is practicing this very alobha cetasika, practicing the metta paramis, the practicing this adosa cetasika. And this adosa cetasika, if you understand it, if you practice it, then will naturally deepen your understanding of dukkha, therefore also your karuna, your compassion, because compassion is a result of understanding the dukkha. And the dukkha is understood by practicing this non-anger, non-resistance. The essence of non-anger is non-resistance. So what is the Lakhana of Adosa. What is the characteristic of Adosa? Achandika. Achandika means lack of ferocity. And lack of ferocity is also connected to the other aspect of lack of ferocity is avirodha, non-opposing. So lack of ferocity and non-opposing is the characteristic of non-hate, the characteristic of metta. It is very important to realize it and to see it very clearly. You can practice metta, means love, in the sense of friendship, real love, no, detached love. Why metta adosa comes after alobha? Because you can only practice adosa when you have alobha. If you do not have alobha, then the love is not wholesome love, it is unwholesome love. It is an attachment. Prema. But prema can be positive also. That is that. It is a bit intriguing, these words, because we don't have any good words for love not polluted by attachment. In so this adosa then, in the sense of love being not polluted by the attachment, its essence is a lack of ferocity and non-opposing. Then how do we taste it? What is its function? Aghata vinaya, removing grudge. And the grudge is nothing else but the fever. Parilaha. The opposite of adosa is dosa, and dosa is described as that which is burning our own base. The hate is that which is it is what burns our own base. What is our base? The heart. We have already discussed that. And the metta is exactly opposite. It is that which makes our base grow. It expands our heart by non-opposing and by loving all beings. You are letting your heart grow. Therefore, you will become young, powerful. By hating, you will become old and weak. That is why the manifestation of non-hate is soma bhava, being beautiful, like the full moon. Those who practice metta, they become like a full moon already in this life, and in the next life. Unless they have realized Nibbana, then and then again, the primary cause of that you will see exactly, just like in case of the alobha, the when you practice non-hate, all the sahajata dhammas, all the other mental factors will become different. So our time is over today. To this morning, we will continue in the evening in the usual time. We will tackle all the other mental factors present in each and every moment of wholesome cognition, and I hope you become familiar with them, and you also study them in the order. The order is very important. First, sadha. We have explained why sadha is a leader. When the sadha is there, you will guard your mind. When you guard your mind, Hari and Otapa will appear. When Hari and Otapa will be there, the alobha will appear, the detachment. And when the detachment is there, then you will cease to be angry. So this, they all appear in, even so they all appear in one mind. They are a process. Just like the bhojangas. First comes the sati, then comes the wisdom, then comes energy. Or it is a process. So the same with these cetasikas. It is Buddha has taught them in this order to let us understand that it is a process of growing in wholesome. And this process of growing in wholesome starts with confidence, grows with mindfulness, matures with shame, and attains more maturity with alobha adosa, and comes to maturity with tatra majatata, with upekha and its accompaniments. And what they are and what is upekha, tatra, majatata, we will discuss tonight. So that much for this morning.
Akasatta chabhumattha deva naga mahidika punyantang anumoditva chiram rakantu loka sasanang. Akasatta chavumattha devanaga mahidika punyantang anumoditva chiram rakantu desanang. Akasatta chavumattha devanaga mahidika punyantang anumoditva chiram rakantu tumamparang.